We'll call to order the work session. This is the Council of Cedar Hills. We are in the Community Rec Center. This is Tuesday, May 7th, 2019, and we are beginning at 6:01 p.m. We will turn the time over to Mr. Goodwin to present this item of business.
That's right, we'll apply this. Make it as long as you like or as short as you like. I had all the documents I was prepared to present open up on my desktop, and my computer did updates, so.
While you're looking at that, is Mr. Openshaw, Mr. Webb going to be in?
They will be, yes.
Okay.
But they'll be here for the 7 o'clock courses, so if any questions I can't answer, they will be here.
Okay.
To direct those questions. Okay. Let's talk about, is there a preference on Taco Bell or storage facility, which one you'd like to talk about first?
Taco Bell.
Let's do it.
Okay. It's dinner time.
That's right, it's dinner.
It's got to be one or the other, right?
The Planning Commission didn't make any changes from the proposed site plan that's here right now, or that's being shown right here. Really, the only change of substance, too, I'll point out, is that, let's see if that light shined down. Is it blurry? Turn off these disbanded lights. The overall site for the whole Gateway subdivision, the original plan showed that all of the stormwater would be collected into one community retention system that would percolate into the ground. So all of the storage, whether it's Taco Bell, the storage facility, and all the future vendors would come and they buy into this system. Well, it was becoming very problematic in that it was the city would own the grates that the stormwater went into and the pipes in the streets the stormwater was transferred through, but then once it got to the system itself, it then became the duty and responsibility of the store owner. So it became a bit of a development issue. So they've changed the sites so that there's no longer going to be a community storm drain system. Each site will have its own storm drain system. It'll collect and retain on site. So most of them will be like the AmSource and the Hearts, where they have underground collection systems that the city's not even aware, or the community's just not even aware of it, and they're not visible. You may also see designs like Chase Bank, where they have the rock retention between the sidewalk and the parking lot there. You could see something like that, not here on this one, but on some of the sites, eventually. But this open space really isn't for the community to come and gather and play in anyway. Anyway, so that's one of the major changes on the Taco Bell site. The second one deals with this strip of land that's between the drive-thru and the road here. There's not a lot of flexibility in this site in that when we approved the Gateway subdivision, this access on the 4800 North County Boulevard here is a little bit narrower, and the city required them to widen that so that there's a left turn lane out, a right turn lane out, and an access in. So you see three lanes here where they can queue up. So we required them to widen this road. Additionally, code restricts how wide this can be to the minimum of 24 feet. Our code design standards require, and state regulations, federal regulations, require certain depths on the parking stalls. The sidewalk here has to be a certain depth, and then this, to get big vehicles in and through, is required to be a certain depth. So the only areas where you can really have any flexibility on the width requirements are on the building itself and on this small strip of land here. Now, the reason that that's important is because originally when they came and proposed this site, this, you can see that it says 2.7 feet right here. So it's fairly narrow next to the street, but it was 2 feet. They were able to shrink their stalls and shrink their parking to pile. They had them a little bit bigger than they are shown tonight. And so it was up to 4 feet. And then Taco Bell came back and said, here's the footprint for the building. Taco Bell has standard designs for their buildings where they have standard ovens, counter space, tables, floor sizes. Taco Bell came back and said, here's the size of the building we need, which then chewed back into that, strip.
Kind of leaves that spot as the only variable.
And that's the only variable. That's the only spot where you can have any variation, exactly.
There's no sidewalk there, right?
There's no sidewalk here, so pedestrians won't be, in theory, won't put it past anyone. But in theory, they're not going to be walking up here. They're going to be on the site. They're either going to be walking further this way, or they'll cross here and then come on site this way. So there's a way to access that without having any pedestrians here. And someone in Planning Commission gave the example, well, what if there's a car careening out of control here? Well, 4 feet, 2 feet, I don't know that it's going to really make a difference in the end if that car's out of control like that. So that's the only other change. The elevations themselves, the elevations, we had talked about the organic look rather than metallic look on these, this feature right here. You can see that they have identified the signage locations. I think in general terms, they've done a good job of trying to comply with what the design requirements are for this. And I do appreciate that the building is four sides of brick rather than two sides of brick and then large facade stuck up. So I think given the small nature of the building, it'll look like it belongs down there. Any questions on the top of it? It hasn't really changed since you saw it last.
When would they start construction?
That's a good question. Let me come back to that in a minute. So I want to talk about that under the storage facility. Can we move on to the storage facility? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the storage facility site plan here also did not change in any substantial manner. A concern of the Planning Commission was that they're going to be putting in an 8-foot fence back here. Their photometric plan, meaning their lighting plan, shows that all the light will terminate at the property line, but that's with the inclusion of the fence there. So the lights are box lights that project down in the immediate vicinity around the building here, but with those, with an 8-foot fence, it'll obviously block any light that's going over the property line. The concern from the Planning Commission was, is that fence going to continue on down through the rest of the project? Initially, the developer indicated that it was going to. The only part that they're not responsible for is north of this building, as it goes from here and joins with the Cedar Canyon portion. There's a gap there. By the retention basin, exactly. The city would be responsible for the cost of that fence there, since it's our property and it'd be our fence in that portion.
We'd want to make the same type of
fence. Right, so I've already indicated to the developer that what we'll do is we'll just have you put that fence in and send us an invoice for it.
How long is that gap? How wide is that?
Only a couple hundred feet. It's not very long. Maybe the size of it. It's actually maybe even less than that. You can see that it's close. You can kind of get an idea for it here. This line is back here in the corner, so it's basically from right here.
Somebody's back here, one person's back.
It's maybe, I say a couple hundred feet, but I might be doubling it. It's really not very far. But what we don't want is a gap in fencing here and then us to go back after the back of the fence, and it's different for 100 feet rather than just looking all the same. On this site plan, they did take the planning commission, the city council's recommendation. This is the landscape plan. In an effort to conserve water and just not have unnecessary areas of watering, this crosshatched area here on the back of the building and on the south side is just the zero scape. There's trees. These circles represent trees, but this crosshatched area means it's not grass, it's just gravel. Once again, this isn't area to play in. You're more likely going to see people playing on this portion because it'll be grass, it'll be a retention basin. You won't see people there all the time. You actually probably see people there more in the wintertime, sleds, it's usually what they do. But we want it to be grass there, and then obviously back here where we don't really want people to be, it'd be rocks. And that's only changed from the building last time, but that was a requirement, that was a request from the city council. And then let's talk about when they are going to build these. What they want to do is build, well, let me back up. State law, when building these improvements, they have to normally, they can do it one of two ways. They can either bond for all the improvements, that means all the public streets, the curb, gutter, sidewalks, the lights, hydrants, the water systems, sewers, all of that becomes public infrastructure. That's the stuff that's basically outside of these boxes. So everything in this street, and then there's the 4700 that runs up north and south, all of that becomes public infrastructure. If they want to record their plat prior to building, then they have to post a bond in the amount of 125% of the value of those improvements. And then as they build those improvements, we release that bond money. And then at the end of that, we hold 10% of the value of those improvements for 1 year, what's called a durability phase, and making sure that the sidewalks don't crack, the road compaction levels were correct, that the sewers don't have low levels where things settle. Basically, it ensures the quality of the development. That's one way you can do it, it's a post-student bond. The second way the state allows developers to do these improvements is to not record the plat. And what happens is they go in and the developer, they don't post a bond, but they put in all the improvements. And then they come to the city, there's no bond posted, there's no subdivision, nothing's been recorded. They come to the city and say, we've done the improvements. And hopefully along the way they've done inspections and make sure they're doing it according to the city standards and how it was approved. But they come to the city when it's all said and done and say, we've done according to our plans, and the city accepts it, and then at that point they post the 10% and they go into the durability phase for 1 year. So they still have to do that no matter what. They're doing it the latter way. They don't want to post the bond. What they want to do is to put the public improvements in and then record the plat when they're done. They don't want to post the bond. But they've approached the city and said, what we want to do is we want to build public improvements and at the same time begin construction of the buildings. Typically, we don't do it this way. What we've drafted, though, is an agreement between the city and these developers stating that no certificate of occupancy will be given to them. So let's say that they get the Taco Bell done, but the roads aren't done. Well, we don't give them their certificate of occupancy to start operating the business until the road's done. So basically, it sits there as a shell. Their incentive then is to finish the roads. So we drafted this agreement that withholds the CFO for the buildings, these two buildings, the storage facility and the Taco Bell, until all the public improvements have been accepted. So there's an incentive on their part to get it done and get it done quick and get it done right. Once that bond's in place for 10%, they can go down and record the plat, and at that point with this agreement, they could have already started building the buildings. But like I said, this is not something we typically do. We've had requests from developers in the past to do this, and we've said no. Typically in a residential neighborhood, we won't do that, and I still don't think that it's a good idea to do it for residential neighborhoods. The question is what's the risk for the city in this case? Really, I think that it's quite a low risk. So let's say that they start building the roads, they start laying the infrastructure for the utilities, and they start building the buildings. And the economy takes a nosedive. And they pull their stakes and they walk away saying, we're not going to do this, we don't have the capital to do this anymore. Well, it's not our land, it's not our improvements, it's not our building. Basically, it's just an abandoned project on outside. That's the worst case scenario. We would probably get calls from residents saying, what are you going to do about this unsightly mess? And at that point, we'd say, nothing, it's not ours. You can imagine Midtown Village on a much grander scale. But you also run the risk that the economy, if they could be putting the public improvements in, and the economy could still take a nosedive, and they can still pull up stakes with half of it done. So that's kind of the game. Is do you want to allow them to build at the same time that they're installing these improvements? I am comfortable with it. I don't I don't see a huge downside here. The upside is you get more commercial quicker. The downside is, like I said, I think you could end up with a project that's abandoned, but you could end up with a project that's abandoned either way because they're not posting a bond. And state law doesn't require them to post a bond in this case. And so if they don't post a bond and they get halfway through the improvements and then they say, well, we just went defunct our company and we're going to walk away from that, we're still in the same situation. So I've talked to Jeff about this a little bit. We put a calling down in the county. The county basically said that it's however the city wants to do it, however their ordinances say and however their agreements say. So we've been given some guidance from them. Jeff, what do you have to add?
I think that's pretty clear. I guess one advantage if there is a bond that you could take that bond money and finish the public improvement part, you would still have the abandoned structures.
You could. The only problem I see with that is that they're not required to do a bond for state code.
Right.
So it'd be, I think if we said we're requiring you to do a bond, my fear is that if they're savvy enough, they could say, well, that's an extraction that the state law doesn't allow you to have. And that'd be my drawback to that. But we have an agreement that Joel has reviewed, and I want to talk to you about it because I want to be very clear about this is what's happening. Just in the unlikely event that something goes south, that we know what's happening. We know what we agreed to. I don't see it as being nearly as big of an issue as Midtown Village was, because that one was much different on a much different scale. But I think that's the example that people use of this type of activity. So any thoughts and questions on that? I think it's worth a discussion.
To answer my question about the risk. Yeah, I don't see much to it either with, you know, the owner of the land still going to be motivated to sell it and get it developed if it's owned by all three, so.
Well, and if the price of land falls to nothing compared to today's dollars, they may just sit on it. They may land on it for a while, which, honestly, something like that's outside of the city's control anyway. I mean, if the economy takes a turn like that, then they're going to bank the land. They're not going to go backwards on the project.
So, I mean, I see the advantage of having everything done at once so that as soon as everything's in, you can open it to the ground running, have that business up and running. But what time frame are we talking about? They're going to get probably approval tonight, final approval on this.
We have a pre-construction scheduled on next Wednesday. And pending, like I said, they made some changes to their overall storm drain plan on their site. And so there's some adjustments that they have to make to their overall subdivision related to that, and some minor clerical issues that need to be cleaned up. But once those are done, I mean, they could have shovels in the sand, you know, in a couple of weeks. I mean, they've informed me that they have contractors ready to go, like in the wings ready to go, and they are on me about burning through the summer daylight hours. So. I know that they want to move fast on this. They still have to have the reviews done on their Taco Bell and storage facilities, so I would imagine those will still trail behind the roads just a little bit because, like I said, we've done some adjustments on their site plans that need to still be reviewed by our engineer. So, like I said, let me add this as well. Any approvals that you give tonight, make sure that you add that they're subject to a final engineering. I think one advantage of doing it simultaneously would be it narrows the window that if the economy does take a downturn, that they're possibly done. Yeah, it's occupied.
I think it'll get done faster, and the risk to, in my mind, the risk to getting it done is lower.
There's an argument that the risk is actually lower of being considered rather than better, right?
Yeah, I agree.
That was a great kind of thing. The recession did. Walmart did better in some ways. Like, everybody became a Walmart shopper, including all the time. The recession did. And I would guess Taco Bell has a business model that's
fairly recession. It's the dollar menu.
Yeah.
Yeah. kind of like check city business goes up during the summer.
It's something that we don't typically do, and I want to reiterate that because we've had developers ask to do this in the past, and we've said no. And like for example, they would be homes asked to do this for their projects. We said no. Focus on doing improvements, and that's what they'll see. They're moving fast on that project. But I would maintain that for residential developments like this, I would not make this agreement.
I think one of the discussions we did have was the location of the structures themselves on residential. We have setbacks that we're measuring for property lines that need to be identified. Whereas in our discussion with this, we're talking about a few buildings, and we would require them to provide survey for our building corner location, so we have some way to verify that they are in the correct location to their proposed plat.
The only required subdivision, the only required setback we have on these buildings, as we've talked about this right now, is from the residential homes here. Residential homes here to the back side of this building. That's the only required setback they have, and that's a property line that's not moving. So that's property line that can be established for building purposes.
I like the zero screen too.
Now, we're going to have a discussion on the water on a grand scale and on a micro scale with end of June. We've got some things to come to council before. But I would suggest that the city council seriously consider taking some of the park trips that are throughout the city and doing this type of stuff with the trees and the rocks. We know that we moved from winter to summer because we stopped getting snowplow complaints, and we get your spring weather on complaints, so we've made that transition seamlessly this year.
Yeah, and I've seen it done really, really nicely on the park trips.
It can be done very tactfully, with very, really sharp.
Yeah,
Highway
has done a nice job on that crossing highway.
Yeah, that was a good one. Back
any other thoughts, questions, concerns on the talk about or the storage facility? I guess we can call it extra space or something like this.
Anyone?
Or the agreement?
If not, then we can take a motion to close work session.
I'll make a motion to close work session.
Thank you. Motion made by Council Member Ellsworth. Second by Council Member Miller. All in favor?
Aye.